Roto Grinders presents the Daily Fantasy Fix podcast. Dan Bach talks to the biggest personalities in DFS, delivers commentary on the industry's most important topics, and gives you the advice you need to help build winning lineups.
Both the salary and the matchup are just too good. If you are not playing him in your head-to-head games, you are just going to lose.
You didn't really think we were going to get rid of that, did you?
Here's your host, the one and only, Dan Bach.
Hey everyone, welcome. Another edition here of the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix. I, of course, am Dan Bach. And today, I thought I'd bring back some friends who I had back on the show right around March Madness. And I can honestly say, maybe for the first time in, maybe ever, I actually won a March Madness NCAA pool. And I did it with the help of my friends over at Team Ranking. So, as we've seen this year in Daily Fantasy, you've got Survivor contests over on FanDuel. You got Pick'em contests on FanDuel and DraftKings. So there's this whole gambling element that is seeping into our world and obviously becoming a more regulated market. So they helped me out in March Madness. I'm going to see if they can do the same again this football season. So joining us from TeamRankings.com, we got Tom Federico and David Hess. Fellas, first, thanks. Thanks for the coin that you helped me win in March Madness. Much appreciated.
It's great. I'm glad you got to use the site. And, it was a good year for us. Obviously, with these pools, right, it's, even with an amazing edge, you're still only going to win them once in a while. The long-term returns are great if you have an edge. But, you got to put in the time to stick by it. So any win needs to be celebrated, right? It's going to pay for years and years of entry fees in the future for you, hopefully.
Yes, absolutely. That's the plan. And I'm excited to see what you guys got going this year, too, because obviously I talked about a lot of those free games we've got in DFS. But one thing I am doing this year is me and my buddy Chris Prince, the Beer Makers fan, we're going to enter the Super Contest this year. He's heading to Vegas literally right now, going to pay up our entry, and we're going to take a shot in one of the biggest contests, gambling contests there is in the U.S. So I'm going to lean heavily a little bit on you guys for that as well. So hopefully I can thank you for seven-figure win. That's what I'm hoping yeah. for.
No, it's been amazing watching that thing grow over time. I go out and kind of make the rounds with the sportsbook directors in Vegas once in a while, and have talked to Jay over at the Westgate several times. And we entered it back. We did it once just for kicks back in, David, you remember, it was probably 2013, 11. Yeah. 12, yeah, somewhere around there. And we didn't win. We didn't win, unfortunately. But obviously, that would have been a great marketing coup for Team Rankings. But just watching how that thing's grown, I think it's been interesting to think about the implications that it has on strategy for that pool, right? So, yeah. The one thing right off the bat that everybody thinks about is it's an against the spread pick'em pool, right? And you're getting your choice of games to pick each week, and but the spreads are fixed, right? And yep. So in real life, the spreads are moving, and kind of back in the day, the early days of the Super Contest, it was kind of an easy edge just to look for all the stale lines effectively, when the lines came out for the contest, a certain team was -5, and then by the time you have to submit your picks, they're -7. Well, that's 2 points of value right there. And it seemed like a lot of players didn't quite understand how much of an edge that would confer to you. But now I think, in general, people have gotten smarter about, line movement and line value in general. And it's almost, you start to wonder now, where is there value in reverse psychology, right? Is kind of that the fact that everyone's now going to focus in on the line value that you could get with these stale lines in the Super Contest, is that going to pump up the pick popularity of the games with stale lines to the point where the edge of maybe going the other way or avoiding that game entirely is actually higher than the edge that you would get from chasing the stale line? Does that make sense?
It makes all, it's game theory. We deal with it in Daily Fantasy all the time. And yes, blah, blah, blah is now the starter, was the backup, but he's going to be 50% owned in tournaments. Am I better off just fading it and hoping that I get a 50% jump on the field if he doesn't do well? And we use it every single slate in daily fantasy, and that's one of the things that I'm hoping I can leverage to my advantage with all these sharp gamblers. We'll see. But let's get into what you guys got going here at Team Rankings for this football season. And I want to kind of start out a little bit with survivor pools. What exactly do you guys do in terms of survivor pools, in terms of content and helping users, you know, try to go the distance, to say the very least?
Yeah, so I mean, in short, we've built products around football pools, right? So it's the analog of a lineup optimizer for DFS, if you will. You used our product, Dan, for March Madness. We have two more products for football pools, one specifically for survivor pools and one for pick'em contests and confidence pools. And so similar to what we do for March Madness, right? We've built technology and algorithms that that customize picks for each individual pool that you're in based on the strategy factors that matter the most, right? So the size of your pool, how many people you're competing against, and especially its rules and scoring system and all that, just like season long or DFS. I mean, you have to understand how to optimize picks to take the greatest advantage of your scoring system and other factors. And so we built these products to effectively do all that analytical heavy lifting for you. And I think with pools as compared to fantasy, just as an example, there are some differences in that fantasy tends to be all about matchups, right? And figuring out, hey, I've got these two players. Let's take season long. I've got to choose one to start, one to sit. Who's the better decision? And it's looking at, I think a lot of qualitative judgment calls are made on this guy's going up against a good defense. This guy's going up against a terrible secondary. And sort of that's getting me 75 or 85% to my answer on kind of what my decision should be. With pools, it's very much just all math, right? You can get, if you have a little bit of a better sense of, the odds the Saints have to beat the Bucks in week one than your next opponent, that'll give you some edge. But if you can better quantify the expected value of avoiding the Saints and picking someone else, or in a survivor pool, if you're much more precise at being able to quantify the future value, the opportunity cost of burning the Saints now versus saving them for later, and you can do those things at a much higher level than your opponents, that's going to generate the lion's share of edge. And I get the sense that a lot of people just don't, they either don't understand some of these concepts for pools, or they just don't have the analytical skills to actually to execute them. And that's what we're here to help with. And that's we were kind of doing these things on our own for pools, and we essentially productized what was in our heads.
David, I want to ask you about, and we kind of alluded to it a little bit in that super contest discussion, but it applies absolutely to survivors too, is that, there's something to be said with looking at pick popularity, because ultimately, yes, you've got to win your pick, but you also have to beat others who are competing against you. How do you guys weigh those two things in the survivor pool to decide whether or not, hey, we know this is going to be the chalkiest pick, but you know what? It doesn't really make sense. It's not worth being the chalkiest pick. How do you guys figure that out? Is it straight math algorithm that determines that?
Yeah, that part right there, if you just ignore future value for a minute and assume that the teams have, they're roughly equal and saving one or the other doesn't matter, just considering win percentage and pick percentage, yeah, it's pretty much just straight math. Taking two teams as an example, if there are only two on the schedule, if one team was picked by 50% or 70% of the pool and the other by 30% and they have the same win odds, you're going to want to pick the one that's less popular.
Sure.
So that if you win, you're only alive with a smaller fraction of the pool, hopefully. And I think you understand that concept. But when you extend the math out to a 16-game slate, you essentially have to calculate the odds of every combo of 16 game results happening and what percentage of the pool is going to be alive in each of those combos. And, you know, that's something like, 32,000 possibilities or whatever. I mean, it's not difficult for a computer, but it's difficult for a human to do. So it's really just straight math. It's doing the expected value calculation for every single option and then ranking them. And that's basically the first step before you then start to consider the future value.
Now, you know, on FanDuel's version of Survivor, you only get one entry on these. But, you know, there's a lot of different Survivor pools out there where you can multi-enter. You can have a number of entries. And do you guys is there like a philosophy in terms of how to manage your quote-unquote, you know, Survivor portfolio in those situations?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big kind of differentiating feature of our product is that, you know, it's really the only product out there that adds the second layer of optimization, which is saying not only optimizing, you know, if you're playing one entry in one pool, but if you've got actually a portfolio of 5 or 10 or 20 picks, either in one pool or across multiple pools, you know, what's the best way to divide that, you know, divide that portfolio up against teams? How many different teams should you pick? Number one, how should you divide them across your entries? Number two. And so that's a huge part of our product. I mean, obviously what we do certainly skews more to a more sophisticated or heavily invested, shall we say, Survivor pool player. And, you know, we certainly have, you know, some customers just like I know RotoGrinders does, right, who are playing dozens of lineups every night. Yeah. in DFS tournaments. You know, we have people who are playing 20, 30 plus entries in Survivor pools. And there are a lot of big Survivor pools out there as well. Like there was one, the Ron and Mike pool, I believe it was, in the New York area that got busted by the feds last year. It was like, I forget what the pot was, but it was, you know, if it was millions or 500K or 600K. So, I mean, these are exciting games, right? Survivors are dramatic. People love the format, this whole losing your gone thing. But, you know, the sharp players also understand that in a pool that's that big, you know, you could easily go your whole lifetime without winning it unless you're playing multiple entries. And so if you want to at least increase the odds that you taste the sweetness of victory or have a you know, not insignificant shot at having that sort of potentially life-changing windfall of cash from one of these pools, you know, that's the way you do it. I mean, the problem with office pools in general, March Madness or football, is that, you know, unlike DFS that's kind of going every night, these things only come about once a year. And so you've got to take advantage. They're very high ROI, if you expected ROI, if you're a sharp player. But, you know, you're going to get one shot at this every year. And the only way to, you know, really kind of increase the odds of actually seeing a return from it in a specific year is to be playing multiple entries.
Let's move on to like the kind of NFL pick'em pools and those type of contests. Those are very common around offices, and you know they obviously extend beyond that as well. How big of a factor is the size of a pool when you're kind of deciding, you know, how you're picking your games every single week?
So I think it's a factor. It's never not a factor. And David can shed some light on this as well. But you know what I like to describe to people is that I think the bigger factor, quite frankly, that at least we find, especially when we see when we're talking to our customers and kind of getting a glimpse on how they're thinking about pools, the bigger pick'em pools, at least the bigger factor to us is the strategy for winning a season prize in a pick'em pool versus a weekly prize. And so you've got some pools that only offer season prizes. You've got other pools that have a significant season prize but may give a little bit out each week as a weekly prize to the person who's got the highest score. And then you've got other pools that are just straight one-week competitions where, you know, the slate's getting wiped clean every week. And you know, the difference in sort of optimal pick strategy between playing for a season pool versus a weekly prize, going for a season prize versus a weekly prize, it can be drastic, especially in bigger pools. And typically kind of much bigger of a difference than playing in, say, a season prize pool versus, you know, against 100 versus 1,000 people. So in a season prize pool, especially early on, you know, the numbers will show that, you know, more conservative picking is typically rewarded. It's a war of attrition. You want to kind of make, you want to let, give biased human opponents the chance to shoot themselves in the foot by picking too many dumb upsets over the course of the first, you know, 10 weeks or so. And then you can reassess, right? You can look at where you are and, later on adjust your strategy if you're kind of defending a position in the money over the last third of the pool, let's say, or if you're slightly outside the money. You know, with weekly prizes, you're typically, you know, it's like the being in a big kind of GPP tournament in DFS, right? You're going for a high ceiling score instead of a low floor. You just need to win the thing. You have to come in first. You're going to get 16 more shots at it after week one. And so when people see kind of our optimized pick'em picks for weekly pools, weekly prizes, especially larger in larger pools, they're just kind of blown away by how crazy the picks look. And they don't seem to, a lot of people don't seem to understand that, yes, you know, going in that the most likely outcome of this lineup of picks, if you will, is going to be that, you know, it's going to score poorly, but you know, there are going to be some weeks where there are crazy upsets happening in the NFL. And in those kind of rare weeks, right, this pick combination has a great chance to come in first place. And that general strategy, when you come in first place, you're probably going to be the only person with the highest score. You'll take the whole pot for yourself. It just tends to be a lot better of a strategy than just saying, hey, I'm going to play it safer. And then, you know, I may have to split the weekly prize with, you know, 20% of my pool who also got the same prize. And, you know, that's kind of how the math ends up working out.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's another thing we talk about in DFS sometimes for these big contests is making sure that you're building lineups that are not duplicated, because you really kill your upside in $1 million, you know, first place top heavy payout, and you end up sharing it with, you know, 25 of your best friends instead of just having a differential within those other lineups that can get you $1 million instead of, you know, sharing 50,000 with a whole bunch of other guys. So it's
The analogy we like to use is, you know, in that outcome, it's almost like being in two pools, right?
Yeah.
You have to win two pools. You have to win the first pool, which is to, you know, sort of be first place, right? And that's hard enough to do. But then you might have 200 other people that you now have to either split a pot with or win some sort of tiebreaker against, and this and that. And that's just, you know, an absolute crushing blow to your expected profit.
We're joined by Tom Federico and David Hess of TeamRankings.com. Again, you can find them TeamRankings.com. Use /RotoGrinders. You're going to get a little discount on your packages that you sign up for. So RotoGrinders, TeamRankings.com/RotoGrinders. Make sure you check that out. Now, David, get into a little bit of the mythology in terms of the picks themselves. I mean, you guys, how do you – I know you guys are very math-oriented in terms of your algorithms and you know, deciding, you know, winners, losers against the spread, all that good stuff. But kind of take us a little bit behind the curtain in terms of how long you guys have been working on this algorithm and maybe some things that, you know, go into coming to the conclusions that you end up with.
Sure. You're talking about predicting a single game here?
Yes, more along like the single games, yeah.
Okay, sure. So the site started, Tom, I wasn't around when it started. Tom, what year did it start?
2000. We're 2000. Dinosaurs,
oh,
man.
Oh, jeez.
Dinosaurs. Well, 2000 was when it was just the twinkle in my co-founder's eye. It was in a Stanford dorm room, and he was a math geek. And, you know, this was pre-Moneyball. This was kind of pre-almost anything, the pre-analytics revolution. And, Mike Greenfield was his name, and he decided to put up a site and put his math chops to work.
Sure. So that started with just power ratings. You know, I think most people that are familiar with sports analytics understand power ratings a little bit. Take the scores of the games, locations of the games, maybe do some time weighting, and get a number that tells you how good this team is. You compare them, you get a spread, compare that to the Vegas spread. That's how you make your picks, right? So that's a very simple model. That's what the site started with. And it's still something that we do, and it's an input to the projections. But then we've added other types of predictive models over the years, and the most important couple are a similar games model, which essentially profiles. So you take a week one NFL game, you look at the two teams playing, and you say, all right, this is the statistical profile of the away team, statistical profile of the home team. Let's look for some past games where the home and away teams have the same profiles or similar profiles, as well as similar spread. You know, it's also happening early in the season. And you collect the games that are most similar to this upcoming one, and you look at what happened in those, how often the teams covered the spread, what the final score was. You get a weighted average, essentially, of those past results, and that gives you your prediction for the upcoming game. So that's what the similar games model does. There's a decision tree model, which we like to kind of say that it's essentially doing high volume, complicated trend finding, but doing it in a way that makes the trends that it finds significant. It doesn't just do random one-off things. It has to find the same trend in a bunch of different semi-random samples of the data, so you know that it persists even when you do different cuts of the data. It's not just like a cherry-picking thing. So that model essentially finds hundreds of trends and combines them into kind of an average prediction from those trends. And so we have the decision tree, similar games, power rating models. We combine that with a little bit of other contextual data, market odds being one of the important ones. And we have another master model, essentially, that looks at how the individual models have fared in games that are similar in the past. So, you know, if the home team is a big favorite, it's going to look and see how have these models fared in the past when the home team is a big favorite. And then it prioritizes the model that has performed the best in those situations and gives us the projection for the game. So that's the basic idea. I hope that
makes sense. You know, I'm looking at the page right now, and you know, you've got percentages, you know, similar game percentage, decision tree percentage. Like, what's a number that's like an eye-opening number for you that when it comes up, you're like, whoa, like this almost doesn't feel right? Like, does it ever, I mean, do you come across those situations where you're like, wow, this really feels like it's one side versus, you know, like almost Vegas got the spread wrong on this one? Like, do those situations come up? And is that where, I guess, when it does, is that where the confidence star rating goes through the roof? Is that the correlation there in terms of the easy way for a user to notice it?
Yeah, so the confidence rating there and the odds column are basically, we're taking those individual models there and combining the data in a way that the confidence in the odds column, those are our official predictions. That's what we think is the actual odds of the team covering. And like you said, there are occasions where one of the individual models has a crazy looking number. Like, to me, anytime you get a number that's not in the 40s or 50s in terms of covering the spread, that's crazy. Like, if there's a 60%+ chance for one of the teams, something's off either in the spread or in the model. So looking at the history of the models, you can see there are situations where if the model gets too confident, like if it says 75% to cover, there's something wrong with, there's too few games like that one in the past or something. So there's no way to make a good prediction, and we account for that in this master logic. We know that if there's something that's so far off market, it's probably an issue with the model, not with the market being that poorly, you know, that inefficient. So there are cases where the predictions, all of the models have strong predictions on one side, and in those cases, you know, we end up having a strong prediction for the official one, but I don't think it's ever above 60%. That's
for,
kind
for
of the
NFL
upper end.
At least.
For NFL spread picks, that's an extremely high confidence. And I mean, it's not extremely high confidence, it's at the upper end of what we would ever see in our confidence rating.
Give me a game though. Let me a game here that you find interesting, that, you know, that you're looking at your numbers and, you know, something's kind of popping off the page a little bit for you there where you think like there's value. You know, we're not going to give away everything, but give me one game you guys got.
Tom, you want to take this one?
I mean, you know, there's a couple that are maybe interesting to me, let's say. I mean, this Cleveland-Pittsburgh game, to me is one where I'm just kind of fascinated by it. I was looking at it in for pick'em pools. I was looking at it for survivor pools. I was looking at our betting picks. And this is another interesting angle, right? There may be a different answer to that question depending on what game you're playing, right? Mm. So let's take betting first. So, Cleveland plus four, that line's been moving towards Cleveland lately. I don't know if they opened up at like 5.5 or I believe it was five. Pittsburgh minus five and a half earlier.
Yeah, it was 5.5.
Okay. So it's down to four now. And, obviously the context there is just very interesting, right? You've got a team that's won one game out of its last 32, just the ultimate doormat of the NFL in the last 2 years, who is expected to get better this year, but also, playing against a team in the Steelers who is supposed to be great this year. But they got this whole Le'Veon Bell situation going on. There's some other contextual stuff there. Cleveland, brand new quarterback. So it was just interesting to see where this line settled, and it's still moving, right? I could have seen Cleveland being a bigger underdog than 4 points, right? I've been reading that. I always kind of take these things with a grain of salt when you say, like, oh, you read the sharps are on a certain team.
Yes.
The sharps have been on Cleveland sort of for the last 2 years, and they haven't been doing that well. And then, I feel like, well, that's a whole different conversation we can have. I just listened to your podcast with Purdom. There's all these sort of interesting kind of betting data conversations to have. Let's just say I always take those things with a grain of salt. But if assuming that's true, it's sort of plausible to think that some educated action might be pushing the Cleveland line, to get shorter and shorter. But our models do see value in it from a betting perspective. It's about 55% confidence right now on Cleveland plus four at home. And then though, it's interesting though, looking at pick 'em pools and survivors. I think that. I was surprised in Survivor. Pittsburgh's pick popularity was about 8% the last time I checked. Given that picking against the Browns has been like the candy cane strategy for Survivor in the last 2 years, I was surprised not to see that higher this year. In week one, I mean. But at the same time, I don't even know if 8% is warranted, right? To pick a team like Pittsburgh, who's going to have a ton of future value in an away game, against a team, Cleveland, that's supposed to be a lot better. There's an argument there that 8% is still, even though it's lower than I would have expected, given my opinions of the public, it still may be, too high given the alternatives available this week. But then in pick'em pools, right, if you're in a big, like, one-week pool and you're looking to get a good contrarian pick in, I saw as of yesterday, 90% of people in Yahoo's pick'em game were picking the Steelers to win this game. And that's just crazy. I mean, that's way inefficient, right? That's basically saying that the Vegas line is underestimating Pittsburgh's win odds by like 20%, which is pretty absurd to think that would be the case, right? So in pick'em pools, like if you're in a season prize pool, picking a 4-point underdog in week one probably isn't the way to go this early. But if you're in one of these Vegas contests where they again wipe the slate clean every week, and you're looking for like a super high value, fairly risky pick that will really differentiate your entry in a pick'em contest, Cleveland looks absolutely awesome for that spot.
Last thing to chat about, you guys do some season long projections as well. And I'm kind of curious, like, how you guys go about doing that, especially when we've got a lot of different variables. I think a team like the Giants is just fascinating to look at, where you've got, a completely new coaching staff. You've got a running back who was taken number one overall, who looks like he's going to be a stud. You got Odell Beckham returning off of injury. A lot of different factors for a team like that. Kind of curious what goes into those type of season-long projections that you guys also make.
Yeah, so I like that you mentioned the coaching staff there as one of the factors here. That's I'd say one of our blind spots in the season projections. It's not something that we algorithmically take into account. So the way that the projections work is basically we start with a baseline quality of the team, but looking at the past three seasons, heavily weighting the most recent one, and just looking at you know, nothing else except for what their power rating was the last 3 years, we would have projected the Giants to be about the 28th best team this year, right? But then we adjust that based on how their turnover luck has been recently. So I think this is becoming a little bit more of a common knowledge these days in sports analytics savvy audiences that turnovers are to a certain extent random. And they're not completely random, but there is generally some regression back towards the average value for teams that have extremely high or low turnover rates. But we look a little bit deeper than that. We don't just look at the turnover margin. We look at types of turnovers, you know, interceptions thrown, interceptions caught, fumbles lost, opponent fumbles lost. And when you look at the individual types and also at just fumbles in general, even if they're not lost, what you see is that basically the by far the biggest lucky factor there that changes the next year is opponent fumbles lost. That's just not something that is very repeatable at all. Mm-hmm. So that's the biggest factor there in the turnover luck adjustment that we do. And the Giants last year, their opponents didn't fumble very much. Seventh lowest per game in the NFL. So there's some positive adjustment there for their turnover luck. The other major things that we look at in our projections that are algorithmically factored in are quarterback changes. There's nothing there for the Giants that doesn't affect anything. And then the draft picks from recent years. And what we found is that having good draft classes from 3 and 4 years ago or 3 and 4 drafts ago is a fairly significant predictor of improvement in the upcoming season. That young talent maturing really helps a lot. And the Giants, they had slightly more high draft picks and more draft picks in general than other teams 3 and 4 years ago. So they get a bit of a boost from that. But then even after looking at all of that stuff, we compare our initial raw projections to the betting market season win totals. We generally look at Pinnacle Sportsbook. They're kind of our sports book of record. They're known for letting a lot of sharp players bet there. They don't boot winners as far as I know. Sure. And so they have fairly robust lines. They're some of the most accurate lines around. So we compared to their season win totals, and for the Giants, we're still pretty far below what the market said. So we generally, when that happens, we adjust up a little bit because we know that we can't take into account everything in our model. It's not going to be perfect. And so we move it towards the market some, but we still have them a little bit lower than the market. A 25th in our predictive ratings. I think the last time I looked, their season win total was listed at 7 at Pinnacle, but they were a favorite to go over it. They're a slight favorite to go over 7. And we had their projected wins at 6.9. So we had a little bit of value on them going under, but it wasn't like a massive difference from where the market sees them.
Fascinating. Well, you can find all this stuff at teamrankings.com. Again, use /RotoGrinders when you go there, and you'll get a discount on whatever package you're interested in. Tom, David, I'm looking forward to chatting again. Again, hopefully with 7 figures in my back pocket. And if I do, I'll buy you a nice steak dinner. I promise you that. But
man, that's a great return for us. $7 million, we get a steak dinner.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe a nice bottle of wine too. We'll
a
see.
A million would be fine.
That would be
I'll settle for that.
Well, fellas, thanks so much. And again, thank you guys for listening, downloading, being a part of rotogrinders.com and our community. So if you want to join Team Rankings and see what they're up to, teamrankings.com/RotoGrinders. I'm out for today. NFL is finally here. Get excited. Tons of content. Make sure you're subscribing to our daily fantasy football podcast. It is back up and running, content for you 7 days a week. Till next time, I'm Dan Bach, wishing you best of luck in DFS, and we will see you.